Welcome to YSO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, local singer-songwriter Paige Beller and a conversation with Dennis Grant with United Rehabilitation Services. Maxine Scuba visits Conrad's Corner, all that and more. But up first, for 40 years, Toms of Maine has been promoting their idea of the good life, selling environmentally responsible products and promoting social responsibility.
Success can be measured not only in terms of money made, but in the good created.
Right now, they have a contest underway. It's called 50 States for Good, which is a national initiative to support grassroots community projects. $150,000 will be split between six organizations, and one of those groups will be given $50,000 for their efforts.
At one time, this part of the world was a shallow sea.
One local group, the Little Miami River Keepers, is in the running for some of that grant money. Their success depends a lot on getting the word out. With that in mind, I spoke to Hope Taft and Steve Knopp. They are co-chairs and founders of the organization. We talk about that contest, but first, a little history.
Probably about 20 months ago, when I would launch my canoe here at the Little Miami River, I saw the Tafts and Hope was there, and I talked about perhaps a project to clean up some of the trash. The original intent was to do about the 2 or 3 mile cleanup. Then I had the fortunate opportunity to get Hope involved, and she had a bigger picture, much grander than mine. So we met with a few people from the state and collected some ideas, and it grew from our first cleanup of about 60 volunteers to our last cleanup, which was in July, to 500 volunteers, where we did 105 miles of the cleanup.
It was a great experience. I mean, the word just traveled, and the more we talked to friends, the more they wanted to get involved. And the first thing you knew, we had enough people to clean up the whole Little Miami River, all five counties, all 105 miles of it, from starting in Clark County all the way down to the Ohio River. And that made us realize that there's some things in the river that were too big to put in canoes, because that's how we were cleaning up the river, was by canoe. And there was a grant opportunity that came along that we hope that people in the area will help us get. And in order to do that, they need to go to the Toms of Maine website and vote for the Little Miami River Keepers.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. Explain the situation there.
I saw a grant opportunity for Toms of Maine, who want to have 50 states for the good. We made the top 20 on the merit of our project, which is to get the large items such as cars and dumpsters and hot tubs out of the Little Miami River. Now we need to get votes on their website so that we can get in the top six. And if we get in the top six, then we can earn $20,000 to help get those very large unsightly things out of the river and improve the quality of the river, not only for canoeists and recreational purposes, but also for the wildlife that lives in the corridor.
What's the deadline on getting support for this?
The last day people can vote is September the 13th. It's a real simple voting process. You just click on the web address, find Little Miami River Keepers, confirm that you want to vote for them, and that's it until tomorrow when you need to do it again.
All right, and I have been to your website and seen pictures of some of the cleanup efforts. I'm amazed. It almost seems like more trouble to come down here and dump a television into the river than it does to dispose of it in a correct way or even another easier, improper way.
I can't figure out exactly why people would dump it in the Little Miami River, because you're exactly correct. It's just easier to take it to a dump site and dispose of it properly. So what we found in the Little Miami River is like washing machines and huge barrels and
tires. In July, we took almost 200 tires, large light poles, 400-foot length of wire. I mean, it's amazing the things that come out. We took about 10 tons of trash out in July.
That's incredible. And tell me, what else is going on with the organization? You're under this effort to get support for the grant, and you're also continuing your cleanup efforts?
Yes, and then also on October 3rd, we're going to have a golf outing at Country Club of the North. So if you go to our website, you'll find the details as to the times and the places. And also, at the end of the golf outing, we're going to host a dinner, and we've got artists from the Dayton area who have donated art pictures, and then we're going to auction those off and have a silent auction to raise money for our next year's cleanup.
So more than 500 volunteers you've brought in with past cleanup efforts. You're working with some arts organizations. Any other organizations that you're partnering with?
Tecumseh Land Trust, the Greenway Group, the Glen Helen Group, Boy Scouts, the townships, the park districts, the county commissioners, they're all helping us. Because the Little Miami River is such an asset to this whole area, and it's one that we really need to protect and preserve. In fact, the Green County Community Foundation and their Green Giving Program has sort of adopted us, and we are now part of that program, so we're a 501c3 organization, and we've got the website www.lmriverkeepers.org, and we hope people will come look at it, come look at your website, where I'm sure we can link, and vote for us in the Little Miami River every day between now and September the 13th, and then come join us at the golf outing and join us on our next cleanup, which will be in 2012.
Next year we're going to plan another cleanup. We're not sure exactly what the extent of that cleanup is going to look like. We might not try the whole 105 miles, but certainly from Yellow Springs down through probably Waynesville, we're going to do another cleanup. And hopefully with the grant and with money we're going to try to raise for 2012, we'll be able to get out some of the larger things.
Steve Knopp and Hope Taft with Little Miami River Keepers, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information about the Little Miami River Keepers, future events, or to vote in the Toms of Maine contest, visit their website at lmriverkeepers.org. This is WISO Weekend. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Up next on Conrad's Corner, Maxine Scuba is a professional counselor and teaches life work planning classes at Wright State University, Clark State College, and Antioch University Midwest. Over the last 16 years, she has subdued her inner critic and is now also comfortable with being called a poet.
From then on, you have written various poems about the people in your lives, your experiences.
Yes, I enjoy writing about people, and when I travel, I somehow I get disengaged from my regular life, and so it's much easier to write poetry. I traveled to Italy last spring, not this past spring, but the spring before, and found myself writing daily. And I think it's because I had no one else to talk to except my notebook.
Okay. And you have a poem, I believe, about your sister.
Yes, I do. I do. Yes, writing about the past sometimes helps to put it away, resolve it.
You look upon it as therapy?
In a way, very therapeutic. I was in a writing group, it was about 20 years ago, and there was this Southern woman with this great Southern accent, and she would listen to my poems, and one day she said, "Honey, you're never going to need a psychologist if you just keep writing poetry like that."
Is that true?
Well, that's true. Yes, it is. It's been very therapeutic for me.
So
yes.
The poem about your sister.
It's called At the Door. And I wrote it a couple of years ago. She would appear at the door of the bedroom we shared as I played with my family of dolls. One in each hand, my dolls and I swayed to my make-believe stories. Sometimes, so excited, I would move my dolls in jerks up and down and sideways. Moving to the storyline, my dolls and I were happily lost in play until I heard, "Shiver and shake, shiver and shake, shiver and shake, Maxine," over and over again, a chant from the region of hell called Big Sister Prerogatives, louder and louder until all of us there on the bed were silenced. Yesterday, after one of our long, awkward silences, After 30 years of her disdain and me still asking why, still wanting to stand up to her, she emailed me saying she had Parkinson's, a disease of the muscles, of bodily earthquakes, of shivers and shakes. Now she stands at her own doorway, gathering strength from all her yesterdays for the journey that lies ahead. I have been silenced again, though this time, thankful for words left unsaid, the letter left unwritten.
That's a very touching poem, and a sort of a sad ending in a way. And I gather also on your travels you have had some encounters with some different men.
In my travels in my life, yes, I have. Yes, I have.
And you have written, I think, a number of poems about that. In our various poetry groups, I've heard you read a couple on that subject. I wonder if you have a selection of that aspect of your...
Of my life?
From that aspect of your life.
Yes, I do have one. I can't remember when I wrote this. It's called Different Faces. It has two parts to it.
Two different faces?
Not necessarily two different chapters.
Maybe different phases.
Phases, that's the word. Okay. Number one is New Beginnings. I like New Beginnings. The dewy greens of April leaves, a baby propped in a buggy, laughing at her first snow, or planting a seed in freshly dug earth. That is why, when I called you last night, hardly knowing you and you hardly knowing me, when you spoke my name, it sounded like song, high and full at the peak, then descending to softness, a roller coaster of sound. I knew I liked this new beginning, too. Two, after the first blush. I am embarrassed by this confession. It is from hard-won knowing. I'm not one for weeding, my friend. My garden, when new, shimmers in May's light. It is spotless in my care, brimming with promise. By August, it is crowded with visiting weeds. Like homeless relatives, they are uninvited, unwelcome, and ready to bed down with me for months. So, as a word of warning, my friend, as we gaze at this garden of possibilities, there may not be much to harvest come the fall.
That has a sort of sad ending, too.
Yes, it does. It's our realizations about ourselves aren't always happy ones, but that just seems to be a truth of mine. But there have been some happy moments and happy endings, even though I do have a problem with harvest.
Okay. Well, you have a hearty laugh, and I think you have some very interesting experiences to record, and you record them with very effective language. So I thank you for sharing all this.
Well, thank you, Conrad.
Maxine Scuba.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. Coming up on September 17th, the 8th Annual Rubber Duck Regatta. Joining me in studio, Dennis Grant, Executive Director with United Rehabilitation Services. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us. First off, what I notice is that it's actually taking place on a Saturday this time around.
This is a big change for us, actually. We were having the event in the June in the past. We've moved it to September the 17th in conjunction with Taste of the Miami Valley. So it's great to have a wonderful venue like that with 20 to 25,000 people coming through sampling all the best restaurants, foods in town. But it's wonderful for us to have a great partnership with them as well, because I tell you, everybody is going to come down and see 15,000 little rubber ducks hit the river. And it's just a great opportunity for us to also reach out to those folks to adopt a duck and get in the race.
It's a great event. And again, it just goes to continue services that you provide adults and children with disabilities or special needs.
That's right. Actually, this is our 55th anniversary as United Rehabilitation Services. You know, our history is we were originally United Cerebral Palsy of Greater Dayton. So 55 years ago, we began services to the Miami Valley. And now we've gone from maybe just a handful of 10 to 12 kids to serving literally 4,000 people a year. Our programs have continued to expand, and the needs continue to grow in this community. So it's extremely important for us to be able to provide things like special needs child care, where we can take care of medically fragile children with nurses and therapists on staff right there on site every day. Adult daycare, in-home care, respite services, parent support. I mean, we really have just a huge array of services that are so important to this community. And this is just one way that we raise funds to kind of offset that funding gap that we have between what we get paid for services and what we get from the United Way and the Human Services Levy and what it really costs. So we appreciate everybody's support with this.
And as the saying goes, things are tough all over. So tell me a little bit about current fundraising conditions that you're dealing with.
Well, you know, it's been a very challenging year. And actually, we're very concerned about the coming year as well. So we're kind of planning ahead. But, you know, we're looking at significant reductions potentially from the Human Services Levy based upon some changes in the tax code, as well as devaluation of property. So, you know, these kinds of events go a long way to make a difference. You know, everybody in this community believes in what we do. They know how important it is for these services to be available for these kids and adults and their families. But, you know, we try to create different ways for people to participate. And this is just a fun, it's a family-friendly event. It's a great opportunity for people to support this cause, and thanks to some of our wonderful sponsors like DP&L and Kroger and Reek and all the others, you know, we've been able to put together a great event that every duck you adopt for $5, every penny of that goes straight to programs because all our expenses are already covered by our sponsors up front.
And how did the partnership with Taste of Miami Valley develop?
Well, you know, I tell you, Amy Zahora and the gang over there, Pete, and everybody at Miami Valley Restaurant Association, they opened the doors for us to do this because we were contacting a few people about where could there be an opportunity for us to be on the river with a nice event where it is family friendly and a lot of people who can not only see the event but participate by actually getting involved in adopting a duck. But they've been wonderful about this. They're very supportive of our gala coming up October the 22nd to celebrate our 55 years of service to the community. All of the best independents in town are participating. And so we actually have a kind of a new twist this year, thanks to Miami Valley Restaurant Association. The night before the big duck drop on September the 16th, that Friday night, we're going to have a new wine tasting event called Cheese and Quackers. So our fun duck quackers will be there, of course, but it's a great event to come down and participate in a wine tasting. We've got some great foods, cheeses, fruits, everything. So we hope people will get involved. You can contact us at URS to get your tickets now or go through the Miami Valley Restaurant Association. It's on both our websites.
And, of course, if they want to participate in the Rubber Duck Regatta, they can also use those that same contact information.
That's right. You can go to ursdayton.org, or you can go to WISO's website. There's a direct link there. You can go to the Miami Valley Restaurant Association. There's a link directly to our duck adoption site. Or you can call 235-DUCK, the duck hotline. So feel free to call. That's Monday through Friday only, though, 8 to 5. Add something, if I could. You can actually adopt a duck at any of the 30 Kroger stores throughout the Miami Valley. If you look at the register, there should be little coupons or certificates on the side of those registers in yellow and purple, and they got a barcode on the back. You can just swipe those right there at the register. It goes right on your grocery bill. So we hope everybody will visit your local Kroger store to adopt your duck early.
All right, Dennis Grant with United Rehabilitation Services of Greater Dayton. The 8th annual Rubber Duck Regatta is Saturday, September 17th at Riverscape Metro Park. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate everything that you guys do here at WISO to keep us going.
Our pleasure. This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Paige Beller is a local singer-songwriter who performs on her own and with indie punk band Jasper the Colossal. Earlier this summer, Beller released a new solo album called Don't You Dare, and this week she appeared on Kaleidoscope for an acoustic set. Host Juliette Fromholt asked Beller what she's been up to since her album was released.
Could you please let me in the dark? I've been trying to write a new album for the solo stuff, pretty much done now, but that's pretty much what I've been spending all of my free time, just trying to write that album and then practicing with Jasper as much as humanly possible. We got a lot of very busy winter coming up, so last couple of months kind of just been preparation for all of that.
Do you, you said you've been working on a lot of stuff for the next solo album. When you sit down to write a song, do you sort of know, like, okay, this is something for, you know, my solo career, or this is something that I'm going to work on with Jasper, or does it kind of come to light as you start working on something?
It kind of takes a little bit. Usually, I don't usually sit down just to write a song. It's kind of like one of those, I kind of get something stuck in my head and then I go write it. So it just kind of depends on the content of the song. You know, I have to keep all my sappy love songs to myself. The girls won't let me do that. So. And then, you know, just tempo and everything else. It's just kind of whatever's going to fit best with whichever project.
Cool. Well, tell me a little bit about the album that you released earlier this year.
It's called Don't You Dare, and it was recorded actually quite some time ago. We started working on it. Jason Gilmore and I started working on it about a year and a half ago now, and just kind of between life and job and bands and whatnot, it just took about that long to get everything done. But I'm pretty happy with it. It's kind of now one of those things that a year and a half after you put out an album, that's why I'm so ready to put out the next album, because I've been working on these other songs.
Well, as far as getting to record with Jason, you know, with a fellow musician that you've played with and a friend, does that make the recording process different than, say, you know, going into a studio and having a weekend or a week to hammer everything out, being able to work with a friend and work, you know, in a home? I assume you recorded in his home studio?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So being able to do it that way, do it at your own pace, do you find that there's an advantage or a disadvantage to going that route, or...?
The only disadvantage I could think of is that I'm very impatient. As soon as I record it, I want to hear it. I drive Jason crazy with that, and there's so much you have to do before you can put it actually onto a CD. So that's about the only disadvantage I can think of. Other than that, though, it's excellent because I get to have that person to bounce ideas off of. I mean, a lot of, like, Jason plays a lot of bass for me, and he wrote all of the bass lines that he played underneath on the three songs that he did, that he played on. And then he also writes MIDI tracks, and he does, you know, some of the drum tracking for me. It's really nice to have that extra person in there. And Jason and I have very similar writing styles, but he also has, you know, about 10 more years of experience doing it. So it's very nice to have somebody to kind of work with, as opposed to just trying, you know, going in there and nailing it all out in a weekend. And it's what I wanted it to sound like, but it might not be the best it could be.
And so along those lines, do you find that when you're recording your solo stuff, do your songs evolve throughout the recording process?
Absolutely. Be a lot of times I'll hear, but it, you know, even just hearing it from the outside, you know, a lot of I don't have anything to record it on except for my cell phone generally. So a lot of times I'm hearing these songs like objectively for the first time. So that makes a whole lot of difference when it comes down to actually writing the song. I end up changing a lot of songs once I actually hear them in front of me. Right, this is one of the newest ones I've got. It will be on the upcoming album. I can't take you. I can't hate you, so I just lie here on the floor. 'Cause you don't want me, and you just can't see, so I just lie here on the floor. No, I don't wanna, no, I don't wanna be here anymore. But I just don't know how to get up and ignore. So I dripping from my brow as I spin around defying and realize my fate. But you're trapped inside my mind and I cannot escape anymore.
Local musician Paige Beller performing earlier this week on Kaleidoscope. You can see Paige live next Saturday at the Trolley Stop as part of Dayton Music Fest and the following weekend at Ladyfest Dayton.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord, and today I'm joined by Karen Kassler. She's the State House News Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Emily. Great to be here.
A progressive think tank this week raised some concerns about the job-creating initiative called the Third Frontier Program. Brian Rotherberg, who's the director, has been supportive of this program in the past. So what's his concern now?
Well, you have a couple of different entities at work here. You've got the Third Frontier, which was a program that uses the revenue from bond sales, which was renewed by voters last year, and it was created for high-tech job-creating programs. And the Third Frontier is part of the Department of Development. Department of Development has gone under some privatization with Jobs Ohio, the job-creating arm of the Department of Development. And so Brian Rothenberg and Progress Ohio are alleging that somehow public dollars from the Third Frontier program are going into Jobs Ohio, and Jobs Ohio is going to use those dollars with local chambers of commerce entities that have been created from local chambers of commerce to support Jobs Ohio's activities in the regions. So it's kind of following the money through the Third Frontier into Jobs Ohio, where it becomes private, to these local chambers of commerce and their arms, such as Columbus 2020 and the Dayton Development Coalition. You know, they're not chambers of commerce, but they're these extra arms, so to speak. And, you know, Rothenberg's concern is that this money will be used not really for job creation programs, but for promotion of Issue 2, which would keep Senate Bill 5, the collective bargaining reform law. He's opposed to that, and he's really worried about that.
So how does he make the connection between these local entities and Senate Bill 5?
Well, chambers of commerce, the big chambers of commerce, have come out in support of Issue 2. And so while these smaller chambers of commerce, like the Dayton Development Coalition, have not made any statements on Issue 2, it's widely assumed that if the chamber of commerce in an area is supportive of Issue 2, then maybe some of these other smaller entities might be. And so when the money from the state comes to them, then will they use that money to support activities that would try to get Issue 2 passed? And so it's really a connection that some have said is probably a stretch. And even Rothenberg says, you know, he's taken some heat from that this week, but he said we'll find out in a couple of months if he's actually right or not.
And how will that be proved?
Well, Jobs Ohio has been telling us that all their information will be public in an annual report. We'll be able to see exactly where their money goes, and we'll be able to track this money and other money as it goes through the Jobs Ohio entity. And Mark Kwame, the Jobs Ohio board president, said this whole idea of transparency and that this money will be used somehow for the Issue 2 campaign is absurd. He says the governor would never allow such a thing. But, you know, now it's kind of a wait and see. And of course, we have to wait until after the election to see. So it's really a trust but verify, but we can't verify until later.
I want to move to another story that was generating some buzz this week, and that is the website that was launched by Treasurer Josh Mandel's office. And it shows the salary of public employees. So what's the story here?
Well, that actual information, that salary information on state and local employees, has been out there for a long time, since April of 2010. It was housed at a conservative think tank called the Buckeye Institute. And they've been building this database for years, spent tens of thousands of dollars to try to create a place where people could come and look and see what public employees make. And the reason for that was because the Buckeye Institute has been advocating for reform of collective bargaining and other activities involving the salaries and benefits of public employees, saying that right now public employee salaries and benefits are not sustainable. And so Josh Mandel has decided to link to their database through his own website. He says this is something he's been talking about for a while. It's not connected to the Issue 2 campaign. But of course, there are those who suspect that it is connected to the Issue 2 campaigns. And certainly there will be salary information that will be brought up during the campaign on collective bargaining reform. that people will use to point to state workers making too much money. Though the other side of that coin is some folks can point to this database and show how little some state employees make.
I've been speaking with Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Emily. Have a great weekend.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield. Before we go, here's Sarah Buckingham with a look at tonight's Sunday Documentary Hour.
Most of us who earn a living have at one time or another been fired. Let go, downsized, outsourced, canned. Just ask Annabelle Gurwitch. Shortly after landing a part in a play directed by her idol, Woody Allen, she was fired because of so-called creative differences. Gurwitch channeled her disbelief and bitterness into something more constructive, creating tonight's show. She started calling her friends and colleagues and found that everyone had a compelling and often hilarious story to tell. Hear those stories tonight at 11 p.m. on Fired, Tales of Jobs Gone Bad, from L.A. Theater Works. But first, at 6 p.m., we'll meet three people who took big risks to find jobs they love on Dream Jobs Outside the Cubicle from Spectrum Radio. When the economy is bad and the job market is worse, people think creatively about work that's really satisfying. We'll look under the ocean and toward the stars to find dream jobs tonight at 6 p.m. on the Sunday Documentary Hour.
Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.